Hey everyone, I'm Mike Whistler, and I sincerely believe that science fiction can help us save the world. But today we're going to talk about fantasy. Well, actually, we're going to talk about why science fiction is better than fantasy and get into a big war. No, well, or the other way around. Either way, this is Exploring Tomorrow. Welcome, everyone. As you can tell, I have a special guest on the show today. This is my first foray into having a guest on the show, so this should be pretty fun. And joining me today is Andrew Gilbert. Andy and I know each other. Andy, Andrew, I don't even know what you go by anymore at this point.
I go by, Andy, Andrews, all, any of that is good.
Cool. We go way back. We've written and produced and made a bunch of short films together over the years, a lot of them science fiction. Not all of them, but a lot of them science fiction. Yeah. In fact, we co-wrote, I think, the science fiction short film that I directed that has probably the most views out of anything we've ever made. It's like, I don't know, 700,000 or something like that currently.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. So yeah, we go way back and, we have a mutual passion for storytelling and, for exploring meaningful questions, through narrative, through storytelling. So I thought I would bring you in. We'd have a fun discussion about, science fiction, hard science fiction, soft science fiction, and fantasy, and where all these things fit together in that sort of broader umbrella of speculative fiction, and hopefully it'll be lots of fun and educational and interesting for anyone who's
I'm to super excited. Yeah, I'm listening to a couple ready of nerds. To yeah, just nerd out with you here for a bit.
It sounds like a good thing to do. I mean, I kind of need it. What else can I do right these days amid a pandemic? Yeah.
If you can't embrace your nerd at this point in human history.
Right. So
then we're doomed.
Before we dive into all that stuff, I wanted to hear from you a little bit about what you've been up to and sort of like a little, what are your credentials to talk about this? Introduce yourself to listeners a little bit.
Yeah, no problem. So what makes me qualified to sort of even discuss this topic with Mike? I'm a PhD. I teach at the University of Colorado. I teach philosophy, narrative, cinema, and have recently started teaching on game studies as well. And so my academic passions then have mirrored what almost I'm more excited about, which is my nerdy hobbies of playing games and writing stories and making films and all kinds of things like that. I guess I technically have credentials, but I'm more just a dork. Just enjoy stories and creating that sort of thing. Yeah.
And so outside of academia, which is pretty awesome. I mean, right there, like you started off with the big one. You got a PhD, so you're already more qualified to do all this than the guy who like barely graduated college, but you also do some other fun stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of these hobbies, yeah. One of my main hobbies right now is I have a podcast that is an actual play podcast for Dungeons and Dragons, where we have, over the course of a couple years now, been releasing these adventures that we play online together, in one massive story of fantasy adventure and thrilling narrative, and luckily, very luckily, and honestly, probably mostly because of COVID-19 and the quarantine, we've been able to play with Dominic Monaghan, who was also just kind of bored and needing something to do and listened to a couple of our podcasts and really enjoyed it. And so he joined us for a 10 session arc of playing this Dungeons and Dragons, through which we told a story that honestly it's amazing. It's when you play a Dungeons and Dragons session, it lasts about 3 to 4 hours sometimes. So it's odd. I've done about as much story with Dom as kind of his part in Lost. is kind of hourly how that sort of works out. He's been this character for me about as much as he's been Charlie.
That's amazing.
Which is kind of hilarious. So, but that's been amazing. You know, we're slowly kind of growing our listener base there and really diving into, I mean, D&D can be lots of different genres, but fantasy specifically is what we've been doing so far. Really, really enjoying it. It's literally become my favorite way to tell stories. And that's wild because you know me. We started in you know, short stories and poems and short films. And we've certainly tried all kinds of different things. And this is sort of it for me. There's just something wild about creating stories like this. Yeah.
That's fascinating. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's great to hear. So definitely well qualified to talk about stories, both from an academic and a practical side. And it's fun because it's like a very different way, I think, of telling stories as well. I have been keenly aware of the fact that I have never played Dungeons and Dragons. And I'm like, it's just like one of those things, like it wasn't really part of my life growing up. I grew up in South America and in Brazil where I was born, and the parents were missionaries there and all that. And it just wasn't around me as a kid. Like it wasn't really a part of Brazilian culture. So I wasn't like familiar with it at all. Interestingly enough, my parents raised me, like they read Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff. So like my exposure to fantasy early on was significant, you know. But it didn't have Dungeons and Dragons. And then the later I've gotten into life, the more I'm surrounded by friends and coworkers who are totally into Dungeons and Dragons and a lot of other things like that, like Magic the Gathering, things like that. And I feel like I'm missing out.
Yeah, there's something odd and special about, I'll get into kind of the academic technical part a little bit here, but there's something wild about diving into a story in which no single person can be the author of that story. Because there's one person that sort of sets up the scene and the setting and maybe like has a couple statistics of monsters or traps that you might encounter, but everyone at the table is enacting their own will of their character, improvisation style, in that moment of the story. And there's a whole element of then you roll dice to determine the outcome of what you'd like to do. So no human individual is in charge of what goes on here. And it's a collaboration that I first found in film that I really enjoyed, that is kind of mimicked here, only to a much greater degree, that just no one's in charge. The story goes where it's fated to go, I guess, because of the dice. It's hard to not talk about the game itself in sort of mystical and magical terms, almost.
No one's in charge. So what you're saying is, it's a lot like life.
It is. It's incredibly like life in that way. Everyone sort of desperately trying to scrape out a story from the kind of random chaos around us is very much like life.
So there's a process of meaning making, I think, that happens and mimics maybe the way we try to like construct a narrative out of the experiences of our lives. My nerdy sort of academic but not officially academic side is that, you know, by being a science fiction writer these past several years, I have invested a lot of time in studying neuroscience, just reading up on the neuroscience of storytelling and trying to understand, like, why is this such a native, natural format for our brains and that we latch onto? So it seems like, you know, we create a narrative one way or another, and then maybe we're just more consciously aware of it as we're doing something like writing a book or playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Right. Yeah. It forces the sort of artificiality of that act into the forefront as a game, right? Life kind of is just as artificial in that construction. It just hides it. And sometimes that can be hard to deal with because you think you deserve a happy ending, let's say, or you think this is your story, or you think this is, you know, and some of those kind of narrative expectations, I think, can get in the way of a lot of happiness sometimes.
I can attest to that.
Well, at the same time, at least structuring some of this chaos, right, and giving us something to hold on to, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, to continue the fantasy metaphors.
Right. We'll have loads of those.
I'm sure.
that's awesome. And that's amazing that you've gotten to do this podcast. Where can people check that out, by the way?
Anywhere you get podcasts, you can look up Goats and Dragons is the name of the podcast. And that one includes the Dom and Dragons, which is the series we played with Dominic Monaghan, which he insisted it be called Dom and Dragons. I told him, I mean, it sounds a little sexy, Dom. And he's like, oh, I know. It's great. I'm all for it. It's a terrible Dom impression. I'm sorry. But it's a lot of fun. And it's honestly, he had never played the game before either. So if you ever are a little bit nervous and maybe want to dip your toe into Dungeons and Dragons, his episodes are a great way to do that because he dives straight into the acting improv side of it, and then is incredibly tentative about, I don't know how to fight this guy. What do I do? Do I punch him? And that's great. He's learning the game live during the podcast, essentially, with everyone else. So it's. Yeah, if you want to see a noob who wants to just ask questions and kind of talk about the game itself, I would thoroughly suggest checking those episodes out.
That's amazing. Yes, definitely worth it. That's awesome. So let's dive in a little bit here to this discussion, this episode around sort of these three distinctions within the broader umbrella of speculative fiction. Got hard science fiction, soft science fiction, and fantasy, but it's not the dividers or the walls between those distinctions are not necessarily always clear cut. So maybe to start off the discussion a little bit, I wonder what your take or your how you might define those three areas, or if you would say, oh, there's more, even you're missing these.
Right. Right. Yeah. Genre is a fascinating field of study, mostly because it's all about human categorization of norms into, you know, sets in order to have expectations going into a story. Right. But defining then what exactly falls into which category becomes a really weird, interesting, nuanced balance of things. I tend to refer to Rick Altman. Had written a great article called "The Semantic Syntactic Approach to Film Genre," it applies to all genre. He just sort of knows film, and what he kind of said was there's sort of two ways to break down a story into a genre. And that is semantically, which is where you take all the tiny little pieces of it and go, where does this piece fit? A laser sword or a ray gun or a spaceship are all sort of little pieces of, like, the generally sci-fi genre. But then he says there, but then there's a syntactic element, which are the more grand kind of pieces in place. Semantics would be the furniture that you put into a room, and the room itself would be the syntactic elements. And so this would be like character development or arcs or grand themes involved, time periods or something like that. And so when I talk to my students about the difference between sci-fi and fantasy, I always then bring up Star Wars as a great example of where that sort of semantic syntactic line kind of drifts. Because I think semantically you might argue, look, this is in space. This is about a galaxy. There's aliens. There's, you know, ray guns and spaceships, and
it's got semantically, it's got all the devices of science fiction in so many ways.
Exactly. Yeah. It's got all the pieces of normal science fiction there. However, the other way to look at that might be syntactically, which is, wait a second, this actually takes place long ago. So it's not in the future. It's technically in our past. It's a quest story, essentially. A person is given a magical item by an old man, right? Essentially.
Classic, the
person is often orphaned. Yeah, I mean, there's then the stories about good versus evil and the pull to both sides, which are more kind of fantasy elements, more traditionally. So you can make an argument for Star Wars kind of either being sci-fi or fantasy, I think, depending on how you break those up.
Right.
And I find that super fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that always does it for me with why I tend to think of Star Wars as fantasy in space more so than science fiction is ultimately the element of magic, as it were, the Force being essentially magic, and that's ignoring the stupid midichlorian explanation
the science of the magic.
Don't ruin this. Come on, George Lucas.
That's funny.
But yeah, I've tended to look at it that way as well, where it's like, I think there's a mixture there, and I understand that, like, people's sort of take on it that way. Where Star Trek, on the other hand, to use the two big ones, right? Star Wars and Star Trek.
Yeah.
Star Trek definitely feels like it's more squarely in the science fiction realm, where there's at least an attempt at plausibility for these ideas. And at times even maybe ventures in closely to hard science fiction, more so than maybe that.
Especially if you include something like politics in like a progression of science almost in Star Trek. Would be a really fascinating kind of way to look at that.
Makes sense, certainly society has evolved. It advanced to such a state where we don't need money anymore. We've really advanced to being able to explore and hold ourselves to sort of these higher standards, which is kind of it's its own fascinating discovery, which I don't feel like remotely qualified to really unpack. Star Trek. It's a monster as world. I've
seen a decent amount. I'd say I'm a fan, but
it's a big world. Well,
the internet will tear us apart if we get to get too into that, which we don't know.
Exactly. No, we're fans first, you know, and then we speculate from there. And that's how I try to approach all of these stories and what I find meaningful and interesting in these stories is first from a position of openness and experience and then the personal reaction to it. That's a lot of what I've been exploring so far in the podcast, is even just my personal speculation and reaction to these meaningful stories. But I also tend, you know, so my bias is towards hard science fiction in a lot of ways. But I'm like a huge fan of Lord of the Rings, you know, sure, Harry Potter, like big fan of those realms as well. So tell me a little bit about fantasy.
Yeah, so this is really interesting because the genre discussion can kind of be how do all of these things differ, but I'm also really interested in that more umbrella term. How can they be related? Because they on the surface can seem so different from each other that why is it that people almost always lump up sci-fi slash fantasy into kind of a single category? And maybe that's a marketing sort of issue, that they don't exactly know where to put all of these different pieces of the genre, so they just sort of lump it together. But I like the term that you use about the speculative fiction. And while I would say maybe sci-fi, and tell me if I get this wrong, but I would imagine sci-fi speculates to the extent or the extreme of humanity, whereas fantasy can try to speculate toward the origins, almost speculate toward the myth that enlightenment has always gotten away from, has always strived to move away from to a certain extent, which means that sci-fi and fantasy then would sort of exist on the same line or trajectory, just perhaps on opposite sides of it to a certain extent. So a speculation to the past about where we came from, what our myths would be, what our history is to a certain extent, and then creating that history as something fantastic, as something that is wild and out there. And while, again, sci-fi looks to the future and maybe can give us either warnings or hope to a certain degree of our trajectories, the idea of a fantastic element of where we came from maybe gives us also a little bit of warning or hope about what is built into us, what is our potential that we've already gone through, and what's a hope that we could kind of ever go back to a certain extent. Is there, what are the elements of that fantasy story that really ring true to you? Is a question then that links origin and foundation of our past into who we currently are to a certain extent. And that's fascinating, that idea of speculating the sort of polar opposites of the human experience. And always wildly imagining the potentials there. So crazy and interesting to me.
That is fascinating. Yeah, because as you're describing that, I think that's a beautiful way of sort of envisioning it, picturing it. Because as you're describing that, I started picturing like a continuum where maybe, in a sense, all storytelling exists on some level on this continuum. And yeah, on one end you might have science fiction that maybe is forward looking, though arguably is always assessing the moment we're in, really.
100%.
And then on the other end is fantasy kind of probably assessing the moment we're in too, but by looking backwards and saying, well, how the hell did we get here?
Exactly. No, I think you're exactly right. Right. Like Sid Field, one of the great like screenwriting sort of minds of modern age, talked about that's exactly what any sort of flash forward or flashback is. Whenever you're in a story, in a movie specifically, and you flash away from the present moment, it's never about where you go in that moment. It's always about what caused you to look back or to look forward or something like that. And that's always sort of stuck with me just in general with narrative is it's not about where we go in our stories necessarily. It's always about what is causing us to go there. Why are we looking to the past? Why are we all of a sudden looking to the future to warn us or to give us some hope about something? because something is going on right now that demands that lens for us to look through, to see it. Otherwise, we're blind to it currently. And so, yeah, I see, yeah, fantasy and sci-fi kind of in those polar reactionary kind of element of the current state of the world,
sort of
humanity.
Yeah, there's a lot of, they're different lenses, but they're both serving, I think, the purpose of sense making and meaning making, right, in the process, which is really fascinating. So where would you say you tend towards most, personally, between fantasy, yeah, and science fiction? Where's sort of your native turf?
Oof. Native turf, I think at this point in my life has definitely, I've waited on the side of fantasy a lot more, because that's mostly where I spend most of my time now, in telling a lot of these stories, especially through Dungeons and Dragons. However, I like some of the movies that have affected me most, and not just for like entertainment value, have been science fiction. Some of the stories that really forced me to question some stuff is really science fiction rather than fantasy at times. And so, partly because as I've gotten older too, I've also mythologized my own history and foundations and origins decently enough at this point that I'm really more fascinated sometimes with what is the extent of humanity? What is the limits of humanity? Because part of my dissertation itself to get my PhD was on what's called post-humanism, which is literally looking and theorizing the extent of, or the boundaries of the human, and what, at what point do we cross that boundary into something else, or have we always, and that is a whole field of study that I won't get into, but we should
discuss this.
But my brain is always kind of delighted in the type of narrative that looks to our limits at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also just not very good at coming up with them. as much as you, for example. Yeah.
Thanks. Hey, I don't know. I mean, it's its own interesting challenge. But yeah, at some point we should dive into discussing post-humanism, transhumanism, all of that, because it's certainly a topic that fascinates me, and I write from, as a science fiction writer, I write about it. So that's its own maybe reason to...
Next time, invite me on and we'll dive into that.
We'll dive into that, because that's a fascinating question that I think is right around the corner for us, so as a species.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear your academic take on that. But yeah, that makes sense, though, with the Dungeons and Dragons. What got you into Dungeons and Dragons, by the way?
Ooh, that's a really good question. So I looked up to one of my older cousins, I think, when I was really young, and he had gotten really into it. And so I just wanted to hang out with him and play whatever he was playing. And he kind of made a little map on a piece of paper, and then kind of, there was no dice, there was no rolling. I think he just kind of talked me through a story of like, hey, you come across a door with, five locks on it. Only all the locks have been broken. What would you like to do? And as soon as that, what would you like to do, came in there, I was like, oh, okay, I like this. I see what we're doing. Now, all of a sudden, I get to decide the story. I get to decide what's going on. What I would do in this case. And it was something, I think my first experience was I was too scared to do much in this world. So I was like, oh, don't open the locked door. I'm not going to touch that. It's locked for a reason. I'm going to go home. And, Yeah, I'm gonna go home and read a book by a river or something.
So you just truly, you were a hobbit. Like the moment you you were a hobbit. Yeah. Yeah. Adventure? No, thank you. I've got a pipe to smoke.
And I totally run games where I tell my players, look, if you want to open a bed and breakfast, like in this magical fantasy town, like I'll make it a cool story for you. Like we'll figure out a way to make that happen. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't always have to be hack and slash and killing things. It's just telling stories. And so, yeah, so I think that's kind of what got me into it at first. And then there were years where I hadn't picked it up again. And then one summer I was like helping my parents clean out the basement, and I found some of my old books with all the rules in it and stuff. And I was like, oh, you know what? I wonder if any of my friends around would want to try this. And they did. And I started developing this world and some of the kind of characters in it and playing with my friends, just flesh that world out even more. And so I kind of just continued until it got to the point where where it's going to sound really haughty, and I hate it when I do this, but where it sounded like we were kind of good at doing this, that we were coming up with fascinating stories, that we knew all the rules, that we could, if we wanted to make this something more permanent to put on the internet for people to listen to, that we could kind of do that. And luckily, yeah, we just kind of took the leap and then got into podcasting our stories, and it's wild. It's super fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I'm always curious, you know, like how people get into to what they're into and something like that in particular. It's interesting because, is there a young, you know, demographic to Dungeons and Dragons today, or has it become
100%? Yeah, there's. I got my nephew an ABCs of Dungeons and Dragons book. Wherever you feel that maybe like your kid is kind of able to deal with fantasy in general, with the idea of an imaginative world with some scary elements to it, but with all the normal, you know, hope and dreams that a normal character might have. When they're sort of old enough for that, they're totally old enough to then imagine that on their own. And at that moment, you can play Dungeons and Dragons. You know, you can. I had a friend that was playing with his daughter and all of her friends, and he set up this scenario about like wolves attacking the town, and you need to save the town from the wolves. And then all of these girls went and befriended the wolves. And that was, he didn't even consider that, but they all went and befriended the wolves and then used the wolves to like overthrow the bad mayor of the town. Yes. Stuff like that. And he's like, it's for all ages. It's
wow. What that demonstrates is there's hope still. The next generation,
100%, 100%. Yeah,
that's amazing. They befriended the wolves.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, that's great. what kind of like, I know we talked a little bit about like in terms of the where fantasy and science fiction are in this sort of big continuum. But is there a specific, from your perspective, a specific role that they play in our world? And is that for good or ill? Like, you know, do they help or hurt the world we're in from your perspective?
I mean, I'm a little biased, perhaps, because
aren't we all? I mean,
all of my hobbies and my career is based on this. But but I would say it only narrative only helps, even if it's a shitty narrative. that at least tells you, like, oh, that's a shitty narrative. I don't know if I can cuss on your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, no. It's all explicit. Yeah, okay. I dropped the F-bomb in the last episode. So.
This is a fucking shitty narrative. So, But why is it shitty? Why am I reacting so strongly to this? All of those are growth opportunities and good questions and, you know, things that we need to always kind of consider. Narrative helps us not just empathize with other humans, but to really understand other perspectives and points of view. And in a world in which we right now have more access to content than any human in the history of humanity, right? That's a crazy fact, but we are just inundated with content and story and narrative and stuff that if it goes to that dangerous side or bad side of things, it's only because people are just literally just absorbing it, and there's no filter without thinking about what they're absorbing, if that makes sense. That's the only point where I start to kind of caution people. We need to be critical of the stories that we're absorbing. You know, we need to think about them. We don't just imbibe constantly and consume in that way. We just have to kind of be aware of not only what the stories are doing, what they're doing to us individually, what are they doing to the greater, you know, world in which this story exists. For the most part, 100% narrative is is good.
I mean, I don't know how we get around it. You know, I think in some ways it's because certainly from the neuroscience side of things, narrative is just the way we make sense of anything, and even in a sense, the construct, the whole idea that. Maybe I'm actually not, in the sense of maybe I'm not real, the me, the sense of just singular me that I have might just be a construct in my mind where I have all these disparate parts doing their jobs and then kind of coming together. But then to make sense and create that sense of me, there has to be this is what the information that's going to be relevant, and this is the information that's not going to be relevant. And that is a the construction of a narrative in and of itself, just to piece together my sense of identity and self is already an act of creating a narrative. But it's fascinating to me too, to hear you say, talk about like the need for being critical and analyzing. That's certainly like a big thing for me, why I've done things like having a film forum and why I like doing blogging, why I do this podcast to try to explore stories. Because I think, and especially feel like speculative genres like science fiction and fantasy can ask these like really big questions that aren't always available to us in other genres. Not to poo-poo on other genres, because I love them too. I just don't happen to write in those genres myself. But I do think that there's especially this moment in time as a species where if we would be more purposeful about how we think about and approach, especially science fiction, there's a lot of important lessons there, a lot of important questions we need to continue to grapple with.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating, you know, kind of sort of hearing your take on that. Because that continues to be something that I try to unpack from my own side as a science fiction writer. I do think that there's something to be said about even the notion of how we build a narrative of our own lives through the selection of narratives. So like you were saying, do we just consume? Do we just like, is it all just come at me? Or do I make certain choices in the construction of myself to be like, I'm going to consume this, but maybe not that. Like even the fact that like I've you know, maybe I don't have free will. I don't know. That's its own discussion.
our third podcast that we should talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But I've, you know, the argument would be that I've made the choice to like really hone in on science fiction as kind of like my wheelhouse, right? Well, that constructs its own narrative,
right?
Just by being, by if sitting in that world, as it were, versus constructing narrative differently by saying I am an engineer and I care nothing about stories or whatever the case may be. Do you just sort of like continue unpacking the idea of like how we interact with fantasy? Do you get interesting pushback from people like you're wasting your time? That's like, when you playing Dungeons and Dragons? It's like silliness, you know?
I 100% did. Kind of until Dom Monahan started playing with us and sort of legitimizing us a little bit. And yeah, like this is honestly something that I've been struggling with on kind of several different fronts, because I also teach game studies. I teach a course called Intro to Game Studies right now. And there's a giant pushback, not just from like parents of students who legitimately are paying a lot of money. And I get that they want a good education for their students. The game studies is a great education for your students. But, you know, they something that seems kind of trivial or associated more with hobbies or something like that. There's kind of a lot of pushback about it. Like, what's the point? Like, why, like, how is this helping? You know, like there are real problems in the world. How is it helping to imagine far off distant worlds or something like that? Or just games. Like why would games be important to learn about and study? It's not like they're everywhere in our society or anything. But there's been a little bit of that and a little bit of my time is spent on validating this to people to a certain extent and saying, look, no, this really is important. And I could really go into a ton of reasons why this is important, but just believe me, this is something that we really need to do kind of as a species. Which honestly brings me to maybe a little bit of a turning point in my own perspective on some of this, which is honestly during this year, which has sucked immensely for many, many people. I think it was around May or June when black individuals are being murdered by cops or something. Like this really ridiculous shitstorm of the world. We had to have a conversation internally in our own group about how do we want to present what we do to people? Are we asking people to escape from this with our material? Or are we offering them something else, something that they can take away from this and then go back into the world and use? And we really just fell on the side of, we don't want this to be simply escape. We need this to be, you know, this isn't just candy bars. We need this to be some broccoli too. We need this to be something that is healthy for people and not just a way to get away from the world. And don't get me wrong. I understand there's a need for that sometimes because it can be overwhelming for people. And I get that. And if you can explore a different space of humanity for a little bit, you know, in the future with science, in the past with fantasy, and then bring some of that new perspective back to this world that is so in trouble right now, that seems so imperative to us as humans that's the point. That's kind of why I make some of this stuff. It's dangerous to ignore it. You know, it's not even that, oh, we do it for fun, which we do, or like, you know, it's a good diversion, which it is. It's dangerous if we don't do it. And that's kind of the perspective that we've been taking a lot recently. While at the same time, you know, trying to have fun and because it is, it's fun. It's brilliant. And yeah. It expands us, but yeah. What was the question? I don't know. Was that kind of answer?
Yes, it does beautifully. And I was just going to follow up there with like, tell me a little bit about that. Why is it dangerous if we don't?
Because because we need it. We in a world where we have access to so much text outside of us. We sometimes can, as a defensive mechanism to that, I think, build up so many barriers to that outside world, mm-hmm. which cuts off empathy for fellow man. It cuts off our ability to explore and discover. We just get so, we close ranks. We find someone who's exactly like us and go, okay, good, you're in my group. No one else matters. Only the group matters. And I get that. And that's, you know, and biologically speaking, evolutionary speaking, I understand why humans do that. We just can't stop there. Because that trajectory leads us down a really, really bad road. One that, frankly, humans have been down before in this world. And it never ends well. It never ends well. If we can use something like fantasy and sci-fi to spark and just a bit of that opening up again, opening up to empathy, to other people, to new ideas, to exploration and discovery again, then there's a hope where there wasn't before. And that's, I mean, I don't want to be too dramatic about it, but that's kind of our only hope as humans. This is kind of all we got left is to start to look at things from other perspectives, to move beyond the only way our group has ever done something, and so let's only keep doing it in that way. Yeah, it's so important. So if ever like I get a student's parent that is asking me like, you know, like why are you spending the time reading Emily Dickinson poetry to my kid? You should be teaching them math or something. First of all, I'm a humanities professor. I don't do that. But
don't ask me to teach math.
Don't ask me to teach math. But secondly, it's like, yeah, but why math? As soon as you ask the question why, then you're into the realm of humanities again. You're into the realm of philosophy and art and narrative, and what's brilliant is science fiction combines those two kind of aspects of here's a hard, cold kind of way of thinking about it, and what happens when we think hardly and coldly about something to a certain extent. It's just so needed in this world. That's, I mean, it's always been needed too, but man, especially it seems lately.
Yeah, especially as we're connected more and more in this world, it seems an increasing necessity for us to imagine what the world can be, not just what it is. Yeah. It's, you know, I'm really thought about exploring this in the podcast quite as much, but the thought that occurs to me too is, you know, the day job I have as a team member, team lead really for a group of storytellers that works closely with a consulting organization that helps transform companies and organizations, and one of the key aspects of it. Well, first of all, why does this consulting organization have a story department, which I'm the you know, the team lead for. That's its own fascinating, interesting exploration there of like, oh, yeah, the value of narrative, right?
Yeah.
And that clearly my boss recognizes. But also their entire work structure is based around helping people imagine an ideal state. And then how do you progress towards that? And so even, you know, as we've gone through and like documented people going through this experience of like value stream mapping, the, you know, what they're offering for their company is, and then it's fascinating to watch people have to figure out how do they tell that story of what their current situation is. And then what, how would they fix all the problems they've now identified? And it's, like, I've actually been part of the exercise of actually doing this. And it's fascinating how hard it is to break out of the here and now and actually engage our imagination and say, no, seriously, what is ideal state? Like, stop putting limitations on yourself and actually imagine what would make this flow so much better and fix all these problems that you're experiencing right now. And it's fascinating to watch people struggle through that process. And it just, to me, that just speaks right back to what you're saying there, but we need this experience. We need this ability to exercise the muscle of imagination.
Right.
Because without doing that, we don't ever get to even begin to imagine. So what, not only what is a better state for my company or organization, but what does a better world look like where cops aren't killing black men, where women aren't getting gypped repeatedly in the work world? And you can name in many more social justice issues that we face, and you know, a world where we're not like behind the eight ball when it comes to climate change and all those kinds of things. Yeah. Like, but it takes an imagination that comes back to how do we exercise that and how do we engage that and engage that thoughtfully, not purely. I think escapism has its place. I would say that. You know, that
agreed. Yeah,
we all need a break, like especially 2020. I need my breaks.
Yeah,
I need my break.
Yeah.
But even in that, I've argued with people about the notion that sometimes you need that escapism just so that you can actually come back refreshed.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and right. It, like, if you are, yeah, like that alone can be a useful tool to affect change currently, is if you can just be okay. Right. If you can be okay first, then you can do some stuff that actually makes real world contributions and stuff like that. And yeah, and that almost even isn't escapism then, because that has such a purpose to rejuvenate and refresh you.
It's like when people are like, oh, you know, just recreation. And when you actually understand that you need leisure to be a sane, healthy human being, that whole like leisure activity becomes a little more meaningful, you know?
Right. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And the Dungeons and Dragons part of it means that you're not only engaging with a story, you're helping create a story, which is also another amazing exercise in humanity is not just absorbing stories, but trying to make your own. And thoroughly, if you're listening to this podcast, please do this. Even if it's a poem, a short story, writing down your thoughts about what might happen to some dude or whatever. That's also great. And then the added aspect of doing that with trusted friends, like having each other's back in telling a story. I mean, it's mimicking life to a certain extent. It's we're all kind of working together on having to trust each other, tell all of our collective story here. And you know, and a little 4-hour session that's meant to just do that is not only training for the world, but yeah, refreshing and rejuvenating, and something thoroughly, thoroughly suggest you try. And therapeutic, fuck. It's so therapeutic, dude. Sometimes you just want to, you know, bash a monster over the head or something.
And seriously.
Sometimes you want to dive into a romance story with a dwarf with a beard or something. And you're like, yeah, it's great. I love it. Let's try it.
Romance with dwarfs. I like it. Absolutely. So what do you think, like, what are the practical things? You know, you touched on a little couple things there that I think is great. What are some practical things that people should do to engage more consciously, more thoughtfully with fantasy and science fiction and just narrative and fiction in general?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, a nice practical way to sort of dip your toe into this and engage, and if you're in the mindset where you're worried about trying to create your own stories or something like that, you think that might be a little daunting to take on, I would thoroughly suggest role-playing games in general to dive into this. Because honestly, most role-playing games are kind of either fantasy or sci-fi. there's not a ton. There are some, but there's not a ton that are just kind of current everyday go to work role play games or something like that, like burger shop role play. I don't know. Thirdly, yeah, dive into some of these games. There's a designer named Grant Howitt who designs what are called one page RPGs. Which are the entirety of the rules of the game to fit on like one page that you can kind of print out. And they're delightful. And he's brilliant. They're really well balanced little games that you can just play with your friends. There's one called Trashkin, and you're like, you're sort of anthropomorphized like raccoons or trash, like trash animals, like rats or something like that, or goat or something like that. And you go on a fun adventure just in a couple hours, telling a story and rolling a couple dice. It's a really ease of the ease of access into some of these games is really, really low. The bar is really low. It's a really nice way to kind of dip your toe into that kind of storytelling. Because it's not, again, it's, you know, one person is the author, so that means none of you are in charge or have the weight of that story, you know, that storyteller hat on. You can just kind of be together and see what comes out of it. And I promise you, something fun and engaging and introspective, for the most part, will almost always come out of that. Yeah.
And it seems really connecting, too.
Entirely, that
there's something it's unique.
Yeah, and again, to the practicality of if you're kind of looking to get into some of this, there's a free web service called Roll20 that has dice and a map that you can draw on and put pictures on and tokens and move the tokens around, and it's all free. You can just go to Roll20 and then play a virtual tabletop together with your friends all across the world. We play with people from Australia and you know, London area and all kinds of, yeah, different time zones. And it's an incredibly connecting experience in a time that is very disconnected.
What a fascinating moment to have to navigate a pandemic, I guess.
Yeah. And again, needed. At the same time, this is exactly what we need. We need people to go play on a spaceship for a while and imagine what's possible for humans. And where's our hope lie? And what are the things we want to avoid in general?
Awesome. Yeah.
So great.
That's great. And I'm going to have to try some of those out. I know that I've played a few similar type games, which there is something really connecting and really unique that happens there in terms of being able to have the shared experience. I mean, that's what that was, the shared experience aspect of stories is one that I've always been fascinated with. So, so what you're talking about makes perfect sense to me. You know, like when I did things like Film Forum, the shared experience aspect was that we were all in this darkened room together for 2 hours. We watched a movie and then we were going to unpack it and have a meaningful discussion around what we connected with. And really riding the emotional wave of coming out of the experience of that particular film. But there's clearly more than one way to have shared experiences. And it sure seems to me like the act of co-creating a story, a narrative, is a really potentially powerful connecting experience. And I can see why so many people are drawn to it and loyal to it. Like, it's, this is an important part of my life and I'm going to keep it up.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And maybe one thing for me that connects this idea of gaming stories, playable stories to a certain extent with science fiction, fantasy, maybe more traditionally understood in literature, is that element of play itself. Is the author playing with these characters of, and I don't know, because part of the way I write a lot of these stories is a lot of improv in my own head. Like, I sort of just put characters in a situation and then go, I wonder what they would say. They'd probably say this and then this and then this. And I'm just acting out the scene in my head. I don't know if that's kind of how you write or...
To a degree. I mean,
But either way, there's always that element of play there. While Freud is somewhat problematic in a lot of instances, he kind of got this one right, that narrative is play. Narrative is adults daydreaming, is adults playing fantasy, is adults playing sci-fi, essentially, in their own heads. That's kind of what narrative is at that sort of core level. And super important for us right now to see our world as malleable enough to play is sometimes a very different perspective than a lot of people have. So many people kind of think our world is just sort of set in stone. There's nothing I can do about it. Why try? Why get into some of this stuff? But if you can understand how shapeable the world can be, super, super important.
Yeah. Yeah. That was actually one of the things I was reflecting on a little bit towards the end of last episode. I was talking about The Martian and my whole experience of sort of Mark Watney-ing my way through a very, very tough season of my life. And the whole idea of, here's this interesting story where the antagonist is not a person or an alien, or it's the circumstances. And I'm like, wow, how relatable is that? Because like, that's the antagonist in most of our lives. It's circumstance, right?
Sure.
And that then, you know, Mark Watney's real superpower in that whole story is problem solving. And that one's one that, like, if, when it comes right down to it, we're all capable of if we invest ourselves. Totally. And so that I connect with that again because of what you're saying there about viewing our world as malleable and actually changeable encourages me to say, okay, I'm going to use my problem solving superpower in whatever capacity I have to affect change. Can I single-handedly stop climate change or systemic racism or misogyny or you name it? No.
Yeah.
But I can problem solve and look and at what I can have influence on. And that's where I come back to these narratives so much and connect with different stories like The Martian, like Arrival, like Contact that I've explored, you know, so far, comes back to this notion that the world is malleable, and I get to exert some level of influence. So I want to be purposeful and thoughtful, and draw inspiration from these stories that of people who have been able to exert a great level of influence and in their own fictional way, and learn from those, because so much from the neuroscience perspective comes the idea that we glom onto these stories as a survival mechanism because we need to make sense of what we might do if we're in a similar situation. And that's where I get hopeful by when I see good stories and I see people actually latch onto those good stories and respond to them. I get hopeful that, okay, so can we now don't just like say cool story, can you now also like apply? Can we live out what makes that such a meaningful story in the first place? So that's my whole shtick with all of this, at least.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. Yeah, I 100% agree. It's awesome.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for joining me for this like lengthy nerd out.
I love it. This. I've had so much fun.
Awesome. Me too. This has been great and refreshing. It's really just an excuse for us to be able to like actually get purposeful and like hang out.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
Just record it while we're at it. And
yeah, might as well.
And it's
literally, like we would time. Have just had that conversation, just you and I.
Yeah, actually,
we literally, if we were just talking, would have had that conversation.
This is pretty much, yeah, pretty much.
Just open it up to more people here.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining and for doing this. Appreciate you taking the time to chat with me about this. Once again, remind folks where they can check out your D&D podcast.
Yeah, anywhere you get podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Casos, any of these, you can just type in Goats and Dragons.
Goats and Dragons. Yeah. Awesome. Great. I encourage people to check it out because it's a lot of fun and really pretty wild stuff. And yeah. I'm sure we'll have more conversations soon. Appreciate you taking a moment to chat with me.
Of course.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We'll see you soon.
Later.
Well, that's our episode for this week. Had a lot of fun getting to catch up with Andrew Gilbert and geek out a little bit about fantasy and science fiction and the creation of narratives. Encourage you, again, check out Goats and Dragons podcast. Really fun stuff and great episodes with Don Monahan. Very worth listening to. And while you're out there checking things out, I do encourage you to check out my website, michaelwhistler.com. You can see more blog entries about storytelling and neuroscience of storytelling, as well as check out some of my fiction. I've got a couple novels and even a nonfiction book on short filmmaking. Encourage you to stop by there, take a look. And if you enjoy these podcasts, please don't hesitate to reach out to me with comments, questions, suggestions, wide open to suggestions. And you can also help out by subscribing, leaving a review, say like on Apple Podcasts. You can leave a quick review there. It's super appreciated. And please feel free to share this with any of your fellow fantasy and science fiction lovers and just spread it around because we're here to engage meaningfully with the stories we enjoy and ask big questions. So thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I invite you to come back again in the future. And please be well, be safe, ask big questions, and don't be afraid to dream big. We'll see you soon.